If happiness is a skill, then how do we learn it? For answers, University of Wisconsin neuroscientist Richard Davidson turned to some of the world's oldest spiritual traditions. Davidson made headlines when he invited contemplatives, most notably the Dalai Lama, to meditate inside a brain scanner. And then he discovered that he could, literally, see the results of meditation. He told Steve Paulson he became interested in the benefits of meditation early on in his career, when he was still a grad student.
I had the great fortune of being around some people as a graduate student whose personal demeanor just was really attractive to me. They seemed incredibly happy. They also seemed very generous. They seemed to be people who are very compassionate, who are very kind. They were just people who I felt really wonderful with. And one of the things I learned is that these were people who had been meditating for quite some time.
So did you start meditating yourself?
I did. I first went to India in 1974 to the consternation of a large segment of the Harvard psychology faculty who thought I was going off the deep end. But that was my first taste of intensive meditation practice. So during the time I was in India, we were meditating for more than 12 hours a day in silence, very rigorously.
Did that change you, that experience?
Yes, it definitely changed me.
How so?
It gave me an insight into the power that this kind of practice can have in transforming the mind. I got a glimpse that it was possible using the equipment that we come into the world with and nothing more to engage in mental exercises that really can improve one's well-being.
Let me ask you about your brain imaging studies of Buddhist monks, because you have worked with the Dalai Lama, who's encouraged some Tibetan Buddhists, who very experienced monks, to come to your lab in Wisconsin to go through your brain scans. First of all, who were these people who came to Madison?
They're an extraordinary collection of individuals. Each of them has been practicing for a minimum of 10,000 hours.
Wow.
Over the course of their lifetime. And in addition, each of them has done at least 1 3-year retreat, practicing every single day, 365 days a year, for a minimum of 8 hours a day for 3 continuous years.
What happened when you hooked them up to your brain scans? What did they do?
Well, there are a number of things that we've already reported in the scientific literature. Some of them we think are quite dramatic. One of the very first paper that we published several years ago showed that when we record the brain electrical signals, when practitioners enter a meditation period in the laboratory, there is just a dramatic and visually detectable change. That's very unusual. In other studies, we have used functional magnetic resonance imaging to probe the detailed circuits in the brain that are affected by different kinds of meditation. And we've been particularly interested in how the generation of compassion affects the brain's response to emotional stimuli that we present. In some sense, you can think of this as the equivalent to a cardiac stress test for the brain.
Are you talking about things like, I don't know, making a loud noise while someone's in the middle of meditation?
A blood-curdling scream. I mean, really loud. That would be, you know, jolting.
Uh-huh. And how do these people react?
To paraphrase one of the practitioners, he said the scream sounded like the equivalent of if you were in a sunlit room, you know, that had windows on all sides, it was very brightly lit, and you lit a candle in the room, you would notice the candle, but it wouldn't stand out.
So, I mean, obviously, these Buddhist meditators are extraordinarily gifted at being able to control some of these mental functions. Have they rewired their brains in a way that's just totally unlike the brains of most of us mere mortals?
I believe that when we ultimately learn more, we will find out that they have rewired their brain in interesting ways. But I think that it's important to view the changes that they produce as being entirely accessible to all of us. One of the questions which were frequently asked when I present this work to lay people in particular is they say, well, you know, this is all very interesting, but we're not going to, you know, in this lifetime and probably, you know, in any lifetime, we're not going to be meditating for 10,000 hours. And so we recently did a study where we had novice practitioners who had never meditated before, but who were interested in learning. We had them engage in practice for 30 minutes a day for 2 weeks. That's it. And what we found briefly is that just 2 weeks of practice, 30 minutes a day, actually makes a difference that is detectable in the brain.
Mm-hmm. You know, the Buddhist meditators that you studied, did they seem like basically happy people? I mean, not just when they were meditating, but other times?
Enormously. I mean, just enormously, infectiously. This is one of the reasons why it's just so cool to be around them. Hmm. I actually, this is, you know, just a complete anecdote, but nevertheless, I think it's symptomatic. We had one of our monks who came to our laboratory. They were staying at a local hotel. And the day after this monk left, I received a phone call in my office from the manager of this hotel. And he said, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt your day, but I just wanted to call to express my thanks for having such a wonderful, interesting person stay at our hotel. There are three people, he said, that spontaneously remarked on how wonderful it was to interact with this person. And he just wanted to encourage me to send him other people.
Send more Buddhist meditators
exactly.
over to the hotel.
Now, this has never happened before or since.
So getting back to the question of happiness, do you think what these, for instance, these experienced Buddhist meditators are doing, sort of their pursuit of happiness, is that sort of fundamentally the same as what most of us would think of as happiness?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of good research today which indicates that for the average American citizen, her or his idea about what will make them happy is flawed. That is, we are not good at predicting or at forecasting what will make us happy.
Give me an example of that.
Buying a fancy new car, getting the bigger and better of this or that. One of the things the Buddhists have learned is to be better forecasters of what will make them happy. And so they have realized that these material possessions, they may make a transient difference, but they're not going to produce a sustained difference. There have even been studies of lottery winners, you know, people who are blue-collar workers who suddenly find themselves with $30 million. And what you see from those studies is that there's an initial boost in their happiness, and then, you know, it goes right back down to baseline. And so one of the great insights from the contemplative traditions, not just Buddhism, is that generosity, actually practicing generosity, actually is something that can produce more sustained increases in happiness. And there was a paper that was recently published in Science by a group of investigators in Canada, where they one component of this research involved giving a group of people, they come in at the beginning of the day, they're given a sum of money, like $50, and they're told, spend it on yourself. This is just a gift. Buy yourself whatever you'd like for this amount of money. And they took another group of people, gave them the same amount of money, and said, your job is to spend the money on other people. Just buy things that you think other people need and give it to them. And lo and behold, when you spend money on other people, you're a lot happier than when you spend money on yourself. Hmm. So I think there's an important insight there.
Let me go back then to sort of the question about sort of ordinary people then. I mean, what do you take away from these studies in terms of what, I mean, do you have suggestions that people might do? I mean, I guess other than the obvious of we should all spend some time meditating every day.
I do have some suggestions. I mean, the one is that, and I think that one can start with really short amounts of practice. You know, people often say, well, I can't, you know, I just, my mind is such that I just can't meditate, or I can't sit for more than 5 minutes. And if someone says that, well, just sit for 5 minutes then. I think there are other things that can be done too, but they need to be explored.
Richard Davidson is a neuropsychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's a longtime friend of the Dalai Lama. Time magazine named him one of the world's 100 most influential people.